iconic Berlin Wall of disinformation. It's your host, live and uncensored, David Knight.
Welcome. It's Monday, November 20th, 2017. Charles Manson is dead. But as I said in the lead-in clip that we put out on Twitter, Periscope, I said his spirit lives on. I'm going to explain that statement to you coming up in the next segment. But of course, remember, and I'll give you a little bit of a spoiler here, he wanted to start a race war. That was his real objective. This guy who ran a cult, was very charismatic, could have gone really far if he'd worn a suit and tie, couldn't he? Instead, he engraved a Nazi insignia on his forehead. That kind of took out his marketing ability right there, along with some other things. But there's some serious issues that we need to take a look at. Even the idea of whether or not he should have been allowed to serve out a life sentence or whether he should have been executed. One of the prosecutors who put him in jail said, we didn't want to give him a death sentence. He deserved it. He earned it. And I think that's the way that we need to understand Charles Manson's life. Of course, I agree in principle with the death penalty. The problem I have is with our justice system and the ability to get a fair trial. So I'm not, it's not a clear cut black and white case for me in all cases, but in cases like this, and in another case that personally involved my family, and there was a confession in it, I don't think there is any reason to keep these people around, to keep the families concerned that this individual is going to get released, that he may do this again to someone else. I don't think there's any reason to do that. We're also going to take a look at censorship. It raised its ugly head again from Twitter as well as Google over the weekend. Our guests today are going to be Doug Casey, Crisis Investing. He talked about, in an editorial, whether we can avert a race war like the one that Charles Manson was trying to start. He did it in a very unsophisticated way. The people following him have been much more sophisticated, not only in starting a race war, but in terms of collapsing our society. So we're going to take a look at some amazing evidence of societal collapse in the West that focuses around Christianity, around Christmas even. You know, we talk about the war on Christmas, and it isn't the kind of silly stuff that Megyn Kelly used to talk about. Oh, we all know that Santa Claus is white, that type of stuff. No, there's some real serious issues, because what we're seeing here is a capitulation by so many in the West, whether it is religious leaders or whether it is people who are political leaders, collapsing, capitulating to a globalist system that is being imposed upon us. We're also going to have award-winning filmmaker Jason Goodman, who will be joining us. He's been doing a lot of research about the Bundy trial. And we played a video of his a couple of weeks ago, and he was there talking to the defender in the case. We want to get an update from him because he's been on that very hard. And another subject that we're going to take a look at, of course, is going to be taxes, but also what's happening at the border. We just had the death of one border agent and another with his skull crushed yesterday as they were attacked by illegal aliens. They were tracking crossing the border. They ambushed these two individuals, killed one of them, severely injured the other one. Many people in the Border Patrol, remember, they were the first ones to, first time that they'd ever endorsed a political candidate when they endorsed President Trump for president. Many of them are saying now that they have been betrayed. And we're going to take a look at one of the ways that this betrayal is happening with members of the Trump administration. The woman who is taking John Kelly's place, apparently, she's had some Senate hearings. We don't know if she's going to be confirmed or not. Hopefully she won't, but it looks like she will be confirmed. And if we look at what she supports in terms of DACA, what she has done under even the George W. Bush administration in terms of immigration should alarm us all. And it should tell us that she is going to be resisting President Trump's agenda on immigration on the wall, just as we've got others like Rex Tillerson, who opposed him on the Paris Climate Agreement, as well as other issues. So time will tell whether or not President Trump will go through with this appointment, whether he will take her out, or whether he'll bring her in as opposition to him internally in the administration. Stay with us. I'm David Knight. We'll be right back.
Found it. It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back on this Monday, November 20th, 2017. As I mentioned at the top of the hour, our guests today are going to be Doug Casey, Crisis Investing, and of course we have not only a crisis investing time, but we also have a time, as he mentioned in an article, is one of the reasons I wanted to get Doug on. He said, can we avert a race war in America? Now, that's a good question. There are a lot of very sophisticated people pushing for precisely that. And as we look at Charles Manson's death, understand that these mass murders in his sick mind, what he wanted to do was to start a race war. That was his stated motivation. He has now died. He had been given 9 life sentences. So I guess you could say he's completed his first life sentence. I don't know how he gets punished for the rest of these sentences. We'll just leave that to God. But when you look at whether or not we should have a death penalty, I think it was very interesting. One of the prosecutors, Kay, who worked with Bugliosi, so they debated as to whether or not they should ask for the gas chamber. And he said, no, that really wasn't a hard decision for them based on the gruesomeness of the crimes and his motives, the fact that he wanted to start a race war, and the fact that there wasn't any question about his guilt. And that's the thing that I have a problem with. You know, it's when we look at the death penalty, can we trust the justice system that we have in this country for anything, but certainly something that is as important as that? Other than that, I would say that I support the death penalty in principle. In practice, I'm still a little bit concerned about it, but people like Charles Manson absolutely deserved it. And that's what Kay said. He says, it's not that we're giving Charles Manson the death penalty. It's that he earned it. Yeah, he earned it based on what he had done. So, you know, when we look at that, and we look at the fact that relatives of the people that he killed would show up on a regular basis to try to make sure that the crazy justice system did not release him. Because that's the other part of this. As crazy as the Justice Department is, as crazy as our system of justice is, where you can send an innocent person, sentence them to death, you can also sentence other innocent people to death by releasing somebody like Charles Manson. And although that wouldn't happen with Charles Manson likely, because he's a high-profile individual, there are other individuals that they do that with on a regular basis. Take a look at the situation in Texas, for example. How did the justice system protect all of those people who were killed in Sutherland Springs Church? It didn't, did it? We have failures in the justice system. We have failures in government everywhere to protect people. So it's not a clear-cut decision. In my own family, I had 2 relatives that were murdered by an individual who later confessed to it and said that, well, he was on drugs. That was his excuse. And it's like, well, that may be a reason, but it's not an excuse. And then relatives in the family had to show up every time he came up for parole to try to remind this idiotic system of quote-unquote justice that we have here, to try to remind them why he was there, of the severity of the crime, of the hatefulness of the crime. Well, we had people in Canada who like to look at people on death row and say, but he writes poetry. He's you know, you should let him out. This is a guy who loves poetry. Well, I guess, you know, Charles Manson loved music, right? He loved the Beatles. So I guess we should let him out. He was praised as a counterculture hero, don't forget, in 1969. And what is the legacy of him? I said in the lead up to this that the spirit of Charles Manson lives on in Black Lives Matter. It lives on in Antifa. The people who want to start a race war. And let me just give you a couple of examples here. One of them, he got an introduction to a young Universal Studios producer, Gary Stromberg. He was working on a film adaptation of The Life of Jesus that was set in modern America with a black Jesus and southern redneck Romans who would crucify him. Okay? That's part of the race war here. That's why he's such a clever guy. He could have been a contender. He could have been a Democrat contender for some office if he would have worn a suit. At the beach one day, Stromberg, this producer, watched Manson preaching against materialistic outlook, only to be questioned about his well-furnished bus. You know, kind of like the way these guys now lecture us about climate change as they fly from one exotic venue to the other on their private jets. They lecture us about income redistribution, providing for the poor, telling us that we have to, like Obama did, telling the poor black people in Africa, you guys can't have air conditioning. If we let you have air conditioning, the planet would melt down. That type of thing. Okay? So, Stromberg watched this on a small scale. Here's Charles Manson. He's preaching against materialism, but he's got some really nice stuff. A really nice bus. So, nonchalantly, Manson tosses the bus keys to a doubter, who promptly drove it away while Manson watched, apparently unconcerned. There you go. See, I'm not attached to this stuff. I'm fine with it. According to Stromberg, Manson had a dynamic personality with an ability to read a person's weaknesses and play them. You know, kind of like Hillary Clinton. I mean, we look at this. This is, and am I overstating this when I say that this cult of Manson, where he'd bring women in, and he would tell them that he worshipped them and he loved them, and but then he would exploit them, wouldn't he? He'd abuse them. Isn't that kind of like Clinton, Hillary Clinton? Haven't we seen that with her? Didn't we see that with her War on Women, the book that Roger Stone did, talking about how she laughing about the child rapist that she got off on a technicality, coming after the people that her husband had violently sexually assaulted and raped, calling these victims bimbos and saying, how are we going to fight these bimbo eruptions? Well, of course, Hillary Clinton would be the one who would come after their reputation after Bill Clinton had already sexually assaulted them. She would assault and assassinate their character, these victims who tried to come forward. So, I mean, how is the Democrat Party really that much different than this? And, of course, the whole idea that he put himself out as a Christ figure. I mean, it wasn't just this movie. He was always telling them that, he was a reincarnation of Christ and other issues. And these people believed it, just like they believe in government now. They believe that the government is God. And so, yeah, he was a counterculture hero. I mean, we have to understand people like this can be on the left or the right. And he was a lefty. He was a lefty maniac killer, cult leader. And when I say Hillary Clinton is a cult leader, I'm just quoting Donna Brazile. She should know, shouldn't she? Shouldn't she know? The Democrat National Cult, the DNC, she was there. She saw it, just like people who were there with Manson saw it as well. And let's look at how successful people like Hillary Clinton and others have been, how much more successful they've been. When you go back and look at the people with the Weather Underground, people like Bill Ayers, going into education where they could create this kind of gaslighting effect. Now we've got people who are, and it's gone full circle. Take a look at Saturday Night Live. Run that clip. Here's B-roll, because we can't play it because NBC will shut our video down if we play just a little bit of an excerpt from King Tut. Dun, dun, right? You remember that? Okay. So King Tut. Now they're upset. You've got students who have been thoroughly indoctrinated by people like Bill Ayers to be triggered by King Tut. And not necessarily because it's some kind of cultural appropriation, because they're doing a joke. The joke was that King Tut was doing a tour of America at the time. They had all these King Tut memorabilia. And so he was joking about the fact that King Tut was coming. So he does all these Egyptian moves. And they've got a saxophone player who has gold all over his skin, who steps out. He's like standing there like a statue. He steps out and takes a sax ride, right? And that is supposed to be like blackface, they said. No, he's supposed to be like an Egyptian statue that comes to life. But this is the mental illness that has been imposed on our society by people like Bill Ayers. Bill Ayers, who stopped bombing buildings, stopped killing cops, and started killing the spirit of our children, stopped the Weather Underground and got into education. His group was the one who created this nonsense called white skin privilege, which now they've shortened it up to just white privilege. And we'll talk about the diversity officer at Apple, who was a black female and got fired because she actually embraced diversity. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this Monday, November 20th, 2017. I want to get back to the legacy of Charles Manson, which I think lives on in Black Lives Matter and Antifa. I think George Soros is simply a much more sophisticated version of Charles Manson. Both of them wanted to create a race war. Both of them saw themselves as God. I mean, look at most of these religious leaders, most of these political leaders. They really do see themselves as God. They see government as God. And why not? I mean, look at the three attributes of God, right? Omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent. Yeah, they see a government that is all-powerful, a government that sees everything, knows everything about you, and is everywhere present in your life. Is that not the very definition of godverment? We have replaced God with godverment, and these are the people who are the heads of the cults. I said Hillary Clinton is a cult. I didn't say that. Donna Brazile actually said that. The Democrat National Cult, the DNC. You got George Soros funding Black Lives Matter that don't want to fix any police issues. They want to use that as a wedge to create a race war. They say it's only an issue with black people. White people, get away. It's not your problem. Well, it is white people's problem. And if you wanted to solve the problem, you would be bringing in people of every color to solve the problem. To say, well, let's talk about what the rules should be for police. Let's talk about how we purge bad officers out of the force. Because obviously there are some problems with it. But they'll come in and they'll pick a problem, an incident that is not clear cut. They'll ignore the clear cut incidents. They want to get into the gray area because that's what they're looking for. They're looking for division. And it's basically a much more sophisticated version of what Charles Manson wanted to do. Charles Manson just wanted to do a false flag attack. He wanted to come in and kill a bunch of people and blame it on black people. And, you know, he was always looking for ways to stir up a race war. As I pointed out, he had a filmmaker and he wanted to do a black Jesus, refilm the New Testament with a black Jesus and have the rednecks as Romans in a modern America. Always looking for ways to do it. How many times have we seen that coming at us from Hollywood? Since Hollywood is a part of this as well, pushing this as well. And also now our corporations. So we've got Hollywood actually making the kinds of movies that Charles Manson wanted to make, but doing it in a very slick, polished, sophisticated way. We see all kinds of movies that are pushing race war, from Machete to many others. We've got a lot of movies that were done by the servant of Weinstein. You know, it's when we look at the kind of stuff that is being put out, it's precisely what they're trying to sell. He wanted to do it. He didn't do it. He didn't have the technical skills or the money to do it, but we have people who do. And we have people like Apple who are pushing for this as well. This story here, Apple's diversity chief steps down only 6 months into the job after she was slammed for saying that a room full of 12 white, blue-eyed, blonde men could be diverse. So they had a diversity chief, but they didn't like the fact that, like Martin Luther King, she wanted to look at the content of their character or the content of their experiences and not simply the color of their skin or their sex, whatever that may mean in today's atmosphere that they're pushing of gender fluidity. But she said that about 12 white men. They could be very diverse because they bring a different life experience. They bring a different life perspective to the conversation. No. Don't you look at their character or their experience. Don't you look at the person. You focus simply on some externals, like the color of their skin or their sex. And this black female who was the diversity chief who got fired from Apple Computer, remember that when you're buying stuff for Christmas, she said, "Diversity is the human experience. I get a little bit frustrated when diversity or the term diversity is tagged to the people of color or the women or the LGBT." Ooh. And so Apple removed her for that. Removed her for that. She was too much like Martin Luther King. Got to get rid of her. Can't have that. Can't have peace between different skin colors. Can't have peace between different sexes. No. Can't have that. Got to mix it up. Got to have a war. And then you look at this fundraiser from Chuck Schumer. And understand, if Doug Jones gets elected in Alabama over Roy Moore, this guy, Chuck Schumer, is going to be giving him marching orders. Yeah, he will be the man in charge. You're going to put that guy in charge? You want to put this guy in charge? Look at this fundraiser mailer that he put out. And across it, he's got the same phrase repeated over and over again in light-colored text at like about a 45-degree angle. And then over it, superimposed, scroll down so people that are looking at this, as I describe it, can see. There it is right there. It's got big, bold red letters. This must stop. What must stop? All the stuff behind it. Kind of a subliminal message because it just repeats over and over and over again the phrases Medicaid cuts, corporate tax cuts, discrimination, Kremlin. Oh, that should trigger people. Kremlin. There's a subliminal for you right there. Kremlin. Repealing health care. Oh, we're not going to have any health care. Yeah. Obamacare never provided any care. Obamacare provided taxes. That's why it is now part of the tax bill. Hope that it stays in. Some people have said, well, we got to take this out. You got to understand the same people that are going to vote against it because of that have already voted. They're going to vote against tax reform anyway. And I'm talking about the people like McCain, people like Flake, people like Susan Collins. These are the people who do not support tax cuts. They don't support cutting Obamacare. They don't support cutting Obamacare taxes. And so Obamacare doesn't provide health care. Obamacare doesn't even provide insurance for many people. The few people that it does provide insurance for, it's done it by stealing money from investors illegally, unconstitutionally. They called it a net asset sweep. That kind of theft, that kind of illegal activity needs to stop. But he uses this in his flyer. Medicaid cuts, repealing health care. And then he gets down, neo-Nazis. So you see, neo-Nazis with all this other stuff, Medicaid cuts, just calling people Nazis if they want to move away from the welfare state, if they want to repeal the Obama tax that doesn't provide health care to anybody, simply provided us a tax. That's the way they push this out here. And then look at the way this is all coming down in the UK, for example. It's happening here, but they're always a little bit ahead of us. It happens, seems like it always happens in the UK. Then it happens in California. Then it happens to the rest of America. So what is happening in Britain right now is that you have a group that wrote a report, Islamophobia, still a challenge for us all. And now they are demanding that every child in Britain be taught that Britain has no native population. No native population. This is a group called the Runnymede Trust. That was where the Magna Carta was signed, and that was a revolution to say that we're going to devolve power away from the king. Well, this is a new Magna Carta that's being put out by the Runnymede Trust, and they're saying that every problem that Muslims have is based on anti-Muslim racism. They say issues like from health to housing to environment to education, employment, criminal justice. Well, if it's happening to them specifically, we can see this happen over and over again everywhere mass groups of Muslims are brought in. They self-ghettoize. They pull themselves out of the society rather than participating in the society, rather than embracing in the wealth of opportunity, the wealth, the results that our culture has given. They reject it. They stay within their own clique. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
He's not sorry when snowflakes can't handle the truth. It's your host, David Knight.
Trying to make some sense of it all. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. I want to finish up with this amazing story about what is happening in the UK. Not only the idea that they're going to tell them that there is no native population in the UK, that it's all a nation of immigrants. Oh, that's a lie that we've heard here before, isn't it? Here in America. And I'm going to tell you why that's a lie here. And I think that they've actually done us a favor by doing this in the UK, because they have jumped the shark, literally, by telling people in UK that they are simply a nation of immigrants, that there is no indigenous population. That's a quote from them. There is no indigenous population in the UK. You understand now what these people, where they're going and where their lies are coming from. This is to push Islam on the UK people. And this is a group that is talking about, this is in the context of saying, we have to stop Islamophobia. This is an organization called the Runnymede Trust. And they have created a history module that they're going to be pushing on people. Developed, of course, by a Marxist academic. Because it's creating that conflict, whether it is economic conflict, whether it's racial conflict, whether it is cultural conflict. You have to have something that is going to destroy completely the culture that you're going to take over, so you can then substitute your own culture with the Marxist-Leninists as gods. And that's what is always happening in this. Before we get into that, though, I just want to remind you of some sales that we have extended, and one that we have brought back. BrainForce has been brought back on 50% off with free shipping. We also have Secret 12, 50% off of free shipping. That's our vitamin B12 formula. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink, a great way to take baseline vitamins and minerals without taking a lot of pills. That is 50% off of free shipping. Caveman, 50% off with free shipping. Z-Shield, our toxic metal and chemical defense support system. That is also 50% off plus free shipping. So take a look at the sales we have at InfoWarsStore.com. That's what funds this operation here, funds this program and everything we do here at InfoWars. We really do appreciate your support. It's very important that we get this information out. Now, I'm going to talk about censorship coming up here in a little bit, but I want to finish with the cultural war that we are involved in. And as I said before, it's not the kind of silly stuff that Megyn Kelly at Fox News would push, or Bill O'Reilly. The idea that, oh, Santa Claus is a white guy. We all know that. That was Megyn Kelly's famous contribution to the culture war. It's far deeper than that, far more sinister than that, far more well thought out than that. That trivializes it, minimizes it. Let me tell you what this is looking like, because we've got some stuff about Christmas in here as well. But first of all, this is the Islamophobia industry, this group called the Runnymede Trust. Their report, Islamophobia, still a challenge for us all. And this is what they say. They've got a curriculum that they put together, developed by a Marxist academic. It says, our migration story states that the UK is a nation of constant migrations with no indigenous population, whose wealth and power came only as a result of the exploitation of the world's resources and its people. And this is a report from Breitbart. They point out the course will enable students to learn how the movement of people, European, African, Asian, to and from these islands has shaped the story of this nation for thousands of years. So by saying that people move, they had mass movements of people, whether it was the Celts coming in or the influence of the Romans or whatever, which happens in every society, that because that happened over a period of time, that there is no indigenous culture, there is no indigenous population in the UK, even though it has roughly been established for thousands of years. And that's what they tried with us, telling us, well, you don't have any indigenous American people, you're just a nation of immigrants. Because, you know, the first people who came over in Plymouth, for example, to escape religious persecution, or in Jamestown to have economic freedom, but still to establish what was a distinctly Western European Anglo civilization that was based on Christian principles. No. You don't. That we're not going to pretend. We're going to pretend that doesn't exist at all, because we have to take that down now. See, we were a nation that had immigrants, but we had a system. We had a culture. We had a system of laws. We had a religion that created that culture and that system of laws. And they want to discount that and say that it didn't exist. You know, when I met my wife in college, she'd come from New York. And in New York, it was a big deal. Like, oh, where are you from? And it's like, well, I'm from here from Florida. Where are your people from? What do you mean? Where are you? Well, you know, like I'm Italian and Polish or anything. It was like, I'm just American. I didn't identify. I wasn't hyphenated American. My family had been here longer than we knew. I had an uncle who cared about that stuff. He traced it back to, you know, beginnings of America, 1600s. I said, I'm just American. We've been here as long as we know. That's my culture. That's my value. That's my nation. She didn't believe it. She said, well, yeah, my dad always says, of course we're Americans. We embrace this country, this culture, this country. She said, you know, be proud of the fact that you're American. But she goes, but really, where are you from? It's like, no, that's just it. I'm an American. I don't have any other culture here. I don't know how many hundreds of years you have to be somewhere before this culture becomes indigenous. How long does it have to be? I mean, did the Indians who were here before the Europeans established their culture, they came from somewhere as well, right? Does that matter? The issue is, do we like the culture that we have here? Can we fix what's wrong with it instead of just dissolving it? It has always been a refinement, an augmentation of the culture, the legal system that we have here. And that's what really needs to have something. Now, we can look at this with a slave trade, for example. We still have auction blocks going on in multiple cities in Libya. Why? Because they've got black Africans, sub-Saharan Africans, trying to migrate into Europe. And they're being caught by the Muslims in Libya and auctioned off as slaves on blocks. I mean, CNN put it there. Do you trust CNN? Now, they showed the footage. So you don't want to believe us. Believe CNN. They showed the footage of people being auctioned off. And as I've said before, every civilization, including the indigenous civilizations that were here before Western European civilization became indigenous to America. Let's just understand that our indigenous culture is Western European Christian. That's our indigenous culture here now. There was a previous indigenous culture, and they want to replace our current culture with something else. They've been open about it. Do we really want to do that? Because it was American, Western European culture that was based on Christianity that stopped slavery. Because we had a person, William Wilberforce, who spent his entire life convincing Christians that it was inconsistent with their religion to have slaves. And so they stopped the slave trade, then they stopped slave ownership. That's what we did. But it hasn't been stopped by these other cultures where it still continues to go on. And we have not just the capturing of black migrants in Libya and being sold off as slaves. We have a massive slave industry where they capture young children and keep them as slaves, as sex slaves. We have never had more slavery and more profit from slavery. And yet they ignore that because they want to focus on the past so they can destroy the foundations of our current culture. And when we look at this, I think nothing says this more than this article from Breitbart. Christian Charity, which is called Scripture Union, it's one of the UK's oldest Christian organizations, has now dropped the Bible completely from its nativity book because they say kids just don't know the basics of Christianity, so we're not going to bother doing it. They have run up the white flag. They said, we have lost the war. We're not even going to try to explain to them. This Christian group is not even going to try to explain to them the fundamentals of the Bible. They just give up on it. Or you have this Catholic priest, who an Irish Catholic priest coming from the Express in UK, says Christians should stop using the word Christmas because it's been hijacked by Santa and by reindeer. Well, you have to understand that Christians were the ones who hijacked it from pagan celebrations like Saturnalia and that sort of thing. And there's been a debate with different Christians of whether or not they should do that, but they had the gumption, the gall, to take that and to make it a Christian holiday. And now they're saying, well, we're just going to give up. We surrender. We're not going to talk to people about the Bible. We're going to just back away from Christmas altogether. That is the spirit of surrender that dominates in the West in the face of this organized takeover by people like George Soros. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We'll take a look at what's going on around Christmas time. We've got some video here of metal detectors at a Christmas tree lighting ceremony in California. Welcome to the 21st century post 9/11. This is absolutely amazing. Of course, they know who's been naughty and who's been nice. And they're going to be censoring you on Twitter as well as in other ways. Before we get to that news real quickly, I want to remind you of some of the specials that we still have at InfoWarsStore.com. 50% off plus free shipping on Z-Shield, on Caveman True Paleo, as well as Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, Super Blue Fluoride-Free Mouthwash. All of those 50% off plus free shipping. Also, Secret 12, our Vitamin B12 formula, 50% off with free shipping, and Brain Force Plus, 50% off with free shipping. Many other sales you'll find at InfoWarsStore.com. You know, at the beginning of the program, I was talking about Saturday Night Live and how the joke video of King Tut done by Steve Martin that was done on Saturday Night Live, that is now triggering students in Portland, Oregon. And I didn't read to you, and let me read to you what they're saying about this. They're saying, when they saw this video, again, it's Steve Martin, and I'm sure most of you have heard it. We're not going to play it for you, but you can see some of the B-roll there as they pull this up. But they saw this, and they were triggered. They said, that's like somebody making a song just littered with the N-word everywhere. And this is a group called Reedies Against Racism, R-A-R. They told the student newspaper. They said the Egyptian garb of the backup dancers and the singers, many of whom are African-American, is racist as well. And then they were really triggered by the gold face of the saxophone dancer who left the tomb. They said, this is an exhibition of blackface. Okay, this is the insanity. And this is where decades of political correctness, what is it now? 40 years, I guess, because that was probably in the 70s that Steve Martin did that as a joke. Interesting that it's Saturday Night Live, isn't it? They've been hoisted by their own petard of absurd political correctness to the extent that it's not safe to make fun of anything anymore except Republicans. That's all they can do. They got a very limited palate. They can make fun of white men, and they can make fun of Republicans. They didn't really say much about Al Franken. We'll talk about that a little bit later, A Tale of Two Standards. That's what we see happening in the media here. It was the worst of crimes, and it was nothing at all. Yeah, Tale of Two Standards. We'll talk about that a little bit, but let's talk about something really serious here. You know, we can talk about whether or not these charges are true with Roy Moore. Did he really talk to an 18-year-old woman who was working in the mall and ask her out for a date? Frankly, I don't know, and I could care less about that charge. They've conflated one serious charge with a false charge. You can go back and take a look at that smear book that Gloria Allred put out there that she will not defend and say, well, I don't know if he signed it or not. Why would I question it? Why would you question that or not? There are people who do. And so you look at that and how they have conflated a lot of non-serious issues. Remember that the age of consent in Alabama was and is 16 years old. You may not like that, but it wouldn't make it a crime. Why is it a crime to talk to somebody who's working in the mall, and then when they say, I'm not interested, you walk away? And yet, what about when they talk to your children about gender fluidity in kindergarten, in elementary school? I have a problem with that, quite frankly. I think that's child abuse. I think that is gaslighting these kids. I think it is greasing the skids to accept pedophilia, because you're saying to these kids, you can decide what gender you are, so therefore you can consent to sex or not. That's really where we're going with this. And we have article after article. Do you hear any of these Republicans who are virtue signaling about these charges against Roy Moore? Do you hear any of them concerned about what is being done to our kids in our schools across America? Here's an example in the UK again, where the Church of England is pushing this. The Church of England is pushing for kids to experiment with their gender identity. They've said that schools should encourage young children to experiment with their gender identity. And they say this has gone out to 4,700 schools that serve more than 1 million pupils in total. They were told by the Church of England Education Office. That's what the Church of England is doing. Instead of telling people that I just reported in the last segment how the kids have absolutely no idea what Christmas is about. And that's because the Church of England is pushing gender fluidity on the kids. They certainly aren't, they have an official established state church there. They have a Church of England that gets government money. That's what an established church means. That's one of the big reasons why America was founded in the first place. It's one of the big reasons why they called the clergy in America the Black Brigade, because they were telling everybody, we do not want to have more control from England. We already left so that we could have religious freedom here. And they didn't want what the First Amendment is about, as I pointed out before. It's not even about stopping an established state church in individual states. I don't think that's a good idea. Nobody wants to see that. They stopped it in the 1840s, but it went on for another 40 years after the First Amendment. Massachusetts, of all places, still had a state church. You had to pay money to that state church as a tax. That's what establishment means. It doesn't mean that you exercise your religious freedom. But that's what they're trying to make that into. They have turned it into that, trying to suppress religious expression. So this is a religion, isn't it? It's the religion that the Church of England is teaching now is not Christianity. It is some kind of greasing the skids for pedophilia. They say children should be at liberty to explore the possibilities of who they might be without judgment or derision. They do not have the capability to make these decisions. This is not appropriate. They cannot consent to this. You are engaging in institutional pedophilia when you do this. And yet we wring our hands about the possibility that an adult man might have talked to women about going out on a date to talk to them, and they turned him down and he went away. That is the big crime? I don't think so. And let's take a look at what else is happening with Christmas. Had this sent to me by a group that was Glendale Action. Not Glendale Action. It was another one. I don't know. Tell me what was the name of the group that sent that to us. But take a look at the fact that we have metal detectors at the Americana at Brand tree lighting ceremony. This is in Glendale, California. And a couple of different individuals, this isn't the video from Glendale Action, but another individual sent that video to me and his own video. Run that clip there, and I'll talk about it while it's running. Actually showing up, and here you can see the metal detector. See, it's gone from the airports and TSA. And it's gone from there to the NFL. The NFL was pushing all this stuff. And now we got retailers pushing these metal detectors just like you were going to go into the airport to harass everybody.
What is it? 16th? Something like that? On a Thursday? So this is what's happening. Well, really?
Yeah.
Who says?
Can you put it down?
What's that?
Can you put this thing down?
You want me to put it down?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
So you got a security guard. Okay. Hold it right there. So you just heard that. The security guard comes over to him and said, you're not allowed to film here. He says, I'm not allowed to film here? Who says? Can you just put it down? He goes, okay, yeah, sure. And he just keeps it filming. He walks on. Good for him. Good for him. Yeah, this is absolutely amazing. Oh, you're not allowed to film here. You're not allowed to film our authoritarian takeover of public spaces. Folks, that was what the Las Vegas attack was fundamentally about, in my opinion. What you just saw there. And they're going to do it. And you know what? When they do have a terror attack, and they will, because that is not effective security. When they do have a terror attack, then those malls are going to get sued out of existence because they have now owned it. They've told everybody, we're going to provide all of your security. We're going to snoop into your bags. We're going to wand you down, or we're going to pat you down, or we're going to put you through a body scan or whatever they're going to do. And they're saying, now we're going to make you safe. And then when they fail, these very people who say, well, we've got to do this because if we don't do this and there's a terror event, they'll sue us. Well, you know what? They're going to sue you and they're going to win when you go through these measures and tell everybody, look, we have performed all of our security rituals and something still happens. That's when this is going to turn down. But think about how awful this is and how ineffective it is. You bunch everybody up at some checkpoint. And we have seen this already happen in many different places. Places where they were doing that to get into churches and areas where there was a large jihadi Muslim population. And what would they do? They would just come up with a car bomb and blow it up right there where all the people were bunched up. Or they would come up with a suicide bomber and do the same thing and kill a bunch of people at the checkpoint. That is not even providing any security. But they always deceive you, don't they? They always say, give up your freedom. Give up your dignity. And we'll make you safe and secure. No. They'll make you a slave. Stay with us. I'm David Knight. We'll be right back.
Making sense common again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. Everyone, whether you agree with President Trump or not, everyone agrees that the central issue that put traction under his campaign was the border. It was the wall. It was Dreamers. It was about crime that was being committed by people who were allowed into our country without being vetted. We've seen it now many times in Long Island. The presence of MS-13. And the victims at this point in time are mostly other Hispanics. This is not an issue pitting one nationality against another, or pitting one race against another. This is MS-13, people trying to escape MS-13, migrating illegally into the United States, moving to Long Island in particular, and then finding that MS-13 and these drug cartel gangs follow them in. Because, you know, hey, if the door is open and there's no vetting of anybody, then anyone is free to come in, including the criminals. So if you got no protection of the borders, that's what you're going to have. And so last night we had a illegal aliens kill a border agent. They attacked two of them, actually. One of them, they crushed his skull in. The other one is still in very serious condition. This happened on November 19th, yesterday. They said the National Border Patrol Council says their agents on the ground have stated that the agents were tracking a group of illegal aliens who then beat the agents with rocks until one was killed and the other hospitalized. This is reported by Breitbart. They say the Border Patrol agent who was killed, his name was Rogelio Martinez, appears to have been ambushed by a group of illegal aliens whom he was tracking. Said our agents' reports from the ground say that he was struck in the head multiple times with a rock or rocks. The other agent then arrived on the scene a short time later and was also ambushed and struck in the head with what is believed to have been a rock or rocks. Family members of slain Agent Martinez will never get to see him come home again, all because we failed to secure our borders from such criminals. And then when we look at what's going on in terms of Trump's nominee for Department of Homeland Security, incredibly soft on the central issue that got President Trump elected. This is a very big deal. It's a very big deal for all of us. I mean, whether or not you care about President Trump getting reelected or not, this is something that is the fundamental underpinning of the Trump agenda, and that is that we have to have control of our borders, because if we don't, you've got many gangs that have been created, and I would explain that they've been created by the war on drugs. Clearly, they're a creation of the war on drugs, and they don't understand that. But as long as we have a war on drugs, as long as we've got more people being killed by these drug cartels in Mexico, the war, the civil war going on between those drug cartels in Mexico, especially as El Chapo disappeared, now there's a big fight there, and it's increased in intensity. Many times more people are being killed in Mexico than in Afghanistan. And yet, even though we got fewer than 30% of Americans who want amnesty for DACA illegals, Nancy Pelosi says she fully intends to pass DACA amnesty by the end of the year. And it's not just the Democrats. It is President Trump's own nominee for Department of Homeland Security. Remember, General Kelly was head of Homeland Security, and this is his assistant. And she is full on with open borders. Breitbart has an article here. Five times Trump's DHS nominee, Nielsen, nixed the president's principles on immigration. Number one, she supports amnesty for illegal aliens, DACA illegal aliens. Number two, she has downplayed Trump's immigration principles. He laid out a 70-point list of immigration principles on October the 8th. When she had her confirmation hearings, she didn't reference those a single time. And she's downplaying Trump's border wall. She said she's going to look into reopening DACA to increase the number of people here, not just to keep those who are here, and then emphasizing that aid for foreign economies is a defense against illegal immigration. Where have we heard this? This is a Bushie, and she is following right along the steps of General Kelly. Nevertheless, it looks like she may get confirmed. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. In the next segment, we're going to be joined by Jason Goodman. He's been doing some reporting. He's actually an award-winning filmmaker, and he's been doing some reporting on the Bundy trial that is going on right now in Las Vegas, Nevada. So we're going to get an update from him on that and talk about what he has seen, what is happening there on that trial. Before we get to Jason in the next segment, I want to talk a little bit about censorship, but I want to finish up with what is happening on our border. At the top of the hour, I gave you the report about the two border agents, one that was nearly killed, one that was killed, had his skull crushed to death, attacked by rocks, by people that they were following that were illegal aliens. They ambushed them, killed the one agent. And now, you know, this has been going on for a couple of weeks. Last week, the Department of Homeland Security renewed their catch and release program in Texas, just like they did under Obama, where they would catch people who were here illegally, but then release them. And now they're doing that again. And the Border Patrol Union, who supported President Trump, are starting to say, what did we vote for here? I don't really understand what happened. And they're really going to be scratching their heads when they look in detail at the new nominee for Department of Homeland Security. This is a person. Her name is Kirsten Nielsen. She was an assistant and is an assistant to John Kelly, who used to be Department of Homeland Security head. Then he became the White House Chief of Staff, and she followed him there. And she was one that was actually implementing the controls on who could see President Trump and so forth. And now she's being pushed into this position by Kelly to be head of Department of Homeland Security, which oversees immigration. And just as a reminder, I went through the five things that she has said in these confirmation hearings. The fact that she wants to have DACA amnesty, just like Nancy Pelosi. She wants to reopen DACA and allow more people in under that. She's been downplaying the border wall. She doesn't talk at all about the immigration principles that were laid out by President Trump on October the 8th. And then if you go back even to the George W. Bush administration, she was around then as well. And what was she doing then? Well, after Hurricane Katrina, Nielsen, again, Trump's, or maybe we should say Kelly's, DHS nominee, allowed 30,000 illegal aliens to enter the U.S. to take blue-collar jobs to rebuild Houston after Katrina. Houston and New Orleans. So before joining the Trump administration as Deputy Chief of Staff, General John Kelly, Nielsen worked as a special assistant to the president for Homeland Security under Bush, and she co-authored the, quote, Hurricane Katrina Lessons Learned report. Yeah, what did we learn? I think we learned that we do not want her in this position. The Bush administration, immediately following Katrina in 2005, temporarily dismantled pro-American worker laws, such as suspending sanctions for employers who willingly hire illegal aliens, and waiving the 1931 Davis-Bacon Act, which mandated that federal contractors pay workers the average regional wage. So they did that, and they made sure that American workers could not get the jobs to rebuild New Orleans and Houston that were devastated from Hurricane Katrina. And that was the person who let in 30,000 illegals to take American jobs back then, 12 years ago. Now, she's being put up by those in the Trump administration to be the new head of Homeland Security. And she is not on board with any of Trump's agenda in terms of protecting the border. This is why it's so important. And this is one of the things, besides the establishment Republicans like Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, the thing that is really blocking President Trump from getting a lot more done and enacting much of the Trump agenda are the people that are around him. I just don't understand how we get people like Nielsen put up for Homeland Security nominee. But let's talk a little bit about censorship. I've got a few minutes left here in this segment before we go to Jason Goodman in the next segment with an update on the Bundys. We saw over the weekend, and of course it was just, what, was it a weekend or two ago, that Roger Stone was banned from Twitter because he questioned CNN. He called them out on garbage reporting. And so they just banned him for life. First they said, well, it's for 3 hours. And then they said, nah, you know what? We just decided we're going to ban you for life. And when you look at what they did with President Trump's account, now they said that was a disgruntled employee. Was it really? Or was it kind of a test case to see how people would react? I don't know. I mean, you think about it. When you look at what Twitter has done this weekend, beginning with taking down Stone Cold Truth, which is another organization. It was just a news organization. That was associated with Roger Stone, but he wasn't making comments on Stone Cold Truth. He would make comments criticizing other reporters directly or whatever on his own personal account. Stone Cold Truth was just putting out articles and reporting. But because it was affiliated with Roger Stone, Twitter shut down Stone Cold Truth this weekend. And we have the story on Infowars.com pointing out that after shutting down Roger Stone, we now have the tactic that's being done by the CEO of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, who is now stripping verification check marks. That hit about the middle of last week. And we've reported on it here at InfoWars. I haven't talked about it yet, but they shut down the verification of Tommy Robinson, Laura Loomer, and others. We've had Congressman Quigley, a Democrat from Illinois, mentioning InfoWars by name to a Twitter executive saying, when are you going to shut them down? Hey, look, they're trending. You got to take this down. And so they have been removing the verification off of people. And The Verge talks about it. They say, Twitter says that it will now judge verified users' offline behavior. And what they're saying is, we have these guidelines, and of course, they will be the sole judge in their mind as to whether or not you violated their online rules. It's very subjective. But now they're going to start looking at your offline behavior. Are you, or have you ever been, a member of an organization that Twitter doesn't like? Well, if you have, then they're going to first shut down your verification. And we've seen it not just from people like Tommy Robinson, who talks about immigration status. We saw it with Julian Assange. They want to say that they can't verify Julian Assange. Why do we have verification? Well, we had verification so that people could distinguish between, say, Donald Trump's account and all the different fake Trump accounts that are out there. So they would verify it so that you'd know that this is really coming from this famous person. And Julian Assange could not get them to verify it. Why? Because it is a political thing. It is not simply a measure of determining whether somebody has their real identity or not. And so now what they're saying, and this is coming from The Verge, they said Twitter now plans to do at least some monitoring of your offline behavior as well. They say take a hypothetical verified user who tweets nothing but pictures of kittens, but he organized Nazi rallies for a living. Could now retain his tweeting privileges, but he could lose his verification badge. So they will shut you down if you put up content that they object to. But if you're a member of an organization that they object to, and not, they put out this Nazis out here, okay, it's Goodman's Law here, but Goodman's Law, but they're demanding that your cookies be enabled. I've had people sending me screen clips and saying, hey, I've got my cookies disabled, and Twitter says I've got to have them on. So they're looking at sites that you're going to. They're going to investigate you and your private life to determine what you're going to be able to do on Twitter. Does that bother you? Boy, it really should. I mean, we have said for the longest time that Twitter and Google and others are part of the national security state. It is not only crony censorship where they use these private organizations, but this is a public-private partnership of Big Brother surveillance. And this is just the beginning of this. They're going to use Minority Report type of predictive behavior for law enforcement and for other groups. And the people who are going to be collecting all this information are going to be people like Twitter and Facebook and Google. And they're doing it to InfoWars. We have the story up at InfoWars that Alex Jones talked about yesterday over the weekend. Google launched a type of censorship where they demonized him by saying, look, he's got, here's all the people from Snopes and the things that they say about Alex Jones. Just when you search him, they throw that stuff up to demonize him, to assassinate his character. And Snopes is not the final arbiter of truth. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. I'm David Knight, and we're going to be talking to Jason Goodman. He's been an award-winning director and cinematographer, and now he is doing news, and he's been following what's happening in the Bundy trial. We played a clip of his a couple of weeks ago, and I wanted to get a first-hand update from Jason about what we saw in that clip, as well as things that have transpired since then as well. Before we go to Jason, real quickly, I want to remind you of the products that we have on sale at InfoWarsStore.com. That's what allows us to remain independent. It's the products that we sell, keeps us going, and it's something that you can use to protect your health and the health of your family as well. Here's some of the items that we have right now, 50% off with free shipping, because we really do appreciate your support. We take our most popular products and we frequently put them on deep discounts. Right now we got several products, 50% off plus free shipping. Here's some of those. Z-Shield, our toxic metal and chemical defense system, 50% off plus free shipping. Caveman, our true paleo formula, is now 50% off with free shipping. Also, Vitamin Mineral Fusion drink mix, a great way to take vitamin and mineral supplements without having to swallow a lot of pills, 50% off with free shipping. We have Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formula. That is also 50% off with free shipping. And finally, Brain Force Plus is 50% off with free shipping. That's not everything that is 50% off with free shipping. You can find that if you go to InfoWarsStore.com. You'll see the current specials. There's a few other things that I haven't mentioned here. And it's a great time to stock up with these deep discounts. If you haven't ever tried these, it's a great time to try them. Or if you have and you like them, stock up right now while they're 50% off with free shipping. You can take a look at the reviews that are on our site. It's curated by a third party, so you can see what other people say about these products, what they have done for them, and do your own research, because ultimately your health is in your hands. All right, let's go to Jason Goodman. And as I mentioned, he's had a long career, award-winning career as a director and a cinematographer. He's now become an independent journalist. He's the founder and editor-in-chief of Crowdsource the Truth. And you can find that on YouTube. The station is, the channel is Jason Goodman. And on Twitter, it is at CS The Truth, as in Crowdsource the Truth. Thank you so much for joining us, Jason.
Thank you for having me, David.
I saw the video that was, I don't know if you sent it to us or somebody else sent it to us. After the trial, you were talking to the defense attorney, and there had been some amazing revelations there that the government had not admitted to previously about snipers that were there, as well as a camera that was there. Then they said, oh, well, we don't have any recording from that camera. Tell us about that exchange that happened there. And of course, we want to get some updates, but let's talk about that first. The FBI snipers and the camera that doesn't have any recording existing to it at the time. Has that changed?
Well, it has, and it actually, you know, it goes beyond not admitting it. They basically openly tried to suppress the evidence.
Yes.
When I was there at the hearing a little over a week ago in Las Vegas, there was some testimony from a witness who I believe was a cousin of the Bundy family, gentleman with the, coincidentally, with the last name Sessions. And he said specifically that he had seen a camera that he described as the size of a football. Now, he said that several times, that it was the size of a football. And remember, this all happened, you know, 2014, 2015. It seemed really rather strange to me that a camera in 2015 would be that large. Most digital cameras are really tiny these days. So I was following up on that because in addition to Mr. Sessions' testimony, Ryan Bundy had stated that he had seen this camera and that it had a laser on it. So it was a very unique sounding camera. And part of what we're trying to do with Crowdsource the Truth is have this kind of interactive relationship with our audience, the crowdsource community, as I call it. So when I did that news story, thank you guys for replaying that, one of the members of our crowdsource community sent me this image of a camera that is the most football-looking camera I've ever seen, and it does have a laser on it. Some of the other things that witnesses had described was that they saw a generator next to this camera. Now, again, even in my career as a professional Hollywood cinematographer and director, I've never used a camera that required a generator. They're always battery powered. So there was obviously something very special about this camera. And the prosecuting attorney, the guy representing the government, tried to say that, well, this just happened to be a surveillance camera that was there, not looking at the Bundys. Now, if you look at the Bundy
there's
ranch,
nothing at all out there. I was there for the standoff. I mean, it is in the middle of hundreds of thousands or maybe millions of acres of absolutely nothing because the government owns all that land. They've driven everyone off of that land except for the Bundy family. That's what the essence of this was about, was driving them off. And so it's absolutely in the middle of nowhere. That's why it was so crazy. When we first got there, it was on Wednesday, I think, before the standoff that happened on Saturday, and they still had that little area that was roped off and the professional sign on it that said First Amendment area, and somebody had put a handwritten sign up, said the First Amendment is not an area. That was something that got even the Republican governor upset about that, and that's what really got the mainstream media in, was when they publicized the fact that out in the middle of the wilderness, they got this little roped off area and says, you can exercise your free speech here, but only here.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, the government would have you believe, David, that they just happen to have these extremely specialized, you know, $5,000 or $6,000 laser night vision 36X zoom lens surveillance camera just happened to be sitting in the middle of a, you know, a field on a ranch where there's nothing around except the Bundys. So by putting this information out there, someone sent me that image of that camera. And when I looked at the specifications, you know, it says that it's got very specific power requirements, I presume because of the laser. The government was also trying to tell us that even though the live streaming feed from that football camera went to three different locations, including a tactical operations center. I forget if that was a Bureau of Land Management or an FBI tactical operations center, but you know, there were snipers, guys that were seen with long guns, and they've got this video feed coming. But the prosecutor tried to make everyone in the courtroom believe that nobody was recording this feed.
Yeah.
Now, I also find that lawyers often speak very specifically. So to say that no one was recording the live stream feed, well, maybe that was true. But by looking at the specifications for that camera, we learned that it also has a memory chip that can go in it, an SDXC tiny, tiny little memory chip. So maybe they were recording to that. But what's happened since that hearing, John Lamb just filled me in this weekend, the government actually has located digital recordings from that camera, and that's now been given over to the defense as part of the discovery process. So I can't say that the crowdsource process had anything to do with that, but I certainly hope it did. I sent the camera information to the defense attorneys.
Well, it's absolutely absurd. And, of course, it was also very interesting, not only the camera and the fact that they're prevaricating around this, saying, well, you know, we sent it off to three different locations, but they weren't recording it there.
Right.
So maybe it was being recorded in the camera itself, but also the fact that they had FBI snipers. When I was there, and I came so close to seeing them, as there were a couple of guys there that had binoculars that were pretty high power, and they said, come here, come here. You can see them out there right now. And I was about to do it, and we were going to try to record it, and then something came up. We had an interview scheduled, had to get on the air live, and we left, and we didn't get back to that. And I've regretted that ever since, that we didn't get a recording of that. But many people were telling me, look, we can see where it is out there. They even told me later on, said, yeah, we left some presents for them overnight. We took a dump in their dugout there because they weren't there overnight. So I hope that happened. I don't know if that happened or not. We're going to be right back with Jason Goodman. Again, you can find him on YouTube, Jason Goodman, on Twitter at CS The Truth. That stands for Crowdsource The Truth. We'll be right back with more information about what's going on in the Bundy trial. How are they treating the people who have been jailed for over 2 years? We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
In a world of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Jason Goodman. He's a filmmaker with a long career, 20 years as a director, a cinematographer. He is now an independent journalist. And a couple of weeks ago, I saw a report that he had filed on his YouTube channel, Jason Goodman. And in it, he was talking to the defense attorney about some new revelations on the Bundy trial. So we wanted to get an update on this because Jason is there covering that in detail. And as he just told us in the last segment, it came out that they were actually recording things and recording with a very unusually large and unusually shaped camera. And as people look at it, one possibility is this camera that is still being sold, and a Hikvision 8 megapixel outdoor camera. I mean, it's got some interesting specs on it in terms of the ability to be able to do smart defog, integrated wiper, smart tracking and detecting, weather resistant and so forth. So it looks very much like the type of camera that would be used in an application like that, as well as fits the physical description that many people had mentioned when they saw that out there. But the key thing about it is that they were reluctant to disclose the existence of such a camera. After it became disclosed, they wanted to insist that there was no recording that was made, even though this was transmitting back to three different locations. Now they say they have a recording, as Jason speculated. Perhaps it was because it was being recorded internally, because it does have a recording chip internally, as well as the ability to be able to stream video back and be remotely controlled. But Jason, I want to talk to you about the way the Bundys are being treated now in this trial, because I don't know if you know how long they've been incarcerated, I was guessing just as we went to break, I said maybe over 2 years, because I mean, it's been 3 years since the event. They spent a lot of time in prison, but it's not just the amount of time that they've been in prison without bail, because, you know, under the Constitution, we theoretically have a right to a speedy trial. We have a right to bail that's been denied to them, but also the brutal punitive conditions that they've been keeping Ryan and Ammon. I know that Ryan, something changed in his conditions. I'm not sure if it's changed in Ammon. Can you give us an update on what's going on with him?
Sure. And, you know, David, to me, this is one of the most important parts of the case, because whichever side of the debate you're on, even if you think that what the Bundys have done is wrong or illegal, you've got to object to the way that they've been treated by the government. We all want to live in a country where we are presumed innocent until proven guilty,
yes.
not presumed guilty and then thrown right in jail and have the government suppress evidence like the recordings from this camera and other things. And so that's the most disturbing aspect of this. It's the government has basically targeted these individuals and is treating them in a way that I think most people would find unimaginable in the United States of America, or at least in the United States of America as we would hope it would be. Mm-hmm. Ryan has just been released to a halfway house. Cliven and Ammon remain incarcerated, and they are approaching 2 years of incarceration, which is really very shocking. You know, Larry Klayman was there at the courthouse, and he obviously, with Freedom Watch, is a civil rights attorney, and, you know, he was outraged by the way the men have been treated. Cliven Bundy is a man of 71 years of age, and his health is deteriorating in jail. He's lost teeth,
oh, yeah.
and they're not allowing him to see a dentist. They're not being given proper medical attention. The men are being subjected to strip searches and essentially sexual assaults and violations. These are devout men, and, you know, they're being specifically, you know, their dignity is being stripped from them, and they're not being given a speedy trial. It's just taking way too long.
So it's what we would expect in a banana republic, the way they would treat political prisoners. And that's basically what we have here in America. And that's why it's important, regardless of what people think about their motivations or their legal arguments for what they were doing, regardless of what people think, the fact is that we have seen not only the Bundys, but many other people who the government will treat you as guilty. They will harass you. They will torture you. They will punish you in very subtle ways. But it is the thing that people, I think, as you point out, that this is a central issue, the inhumane treatment, the unconstitutional treatment that these people are getting in prison. That should not be done to anybody.
It shouldn't. And, you know, David, when you look at it in the context of this idea of for-profit prisons, you really start to get a broader picture of, you know, what may be going on here. And again, this is really, irrespective of which side of the Bundy debate you're on, every person in the United States should be very concerned about the way the Bundy men have been treated in the process of their, you know, these accusations and their incarceration in the lead up to trial. The trial has just begun, and these guys have been in jail, as you said, for nearly 2 years. It's really quite astounding. And I've been told that the only reason that Ryan was let out is that Ryan is representing himself, and he's just been, you know, unyielding in his defense. And it's not to diminish the effort being put forward by the defense attorneys representing Cliven and Ammon, but, you know, if you don't have money, or if you're not smart enough and capable enough to be your own attorney, you're really at the mercy of a state-appointed defense attorney who essentially works for the government. So, you know, if the government wants to put surveillance cameras and lasers and 36X zoom lenses pointed at your house and surround you with snipers and do things to kind of push you over the edge, to coerce you into doing something that they might be able to at least create a pretext for arresting you for, you should be very concerned about that, I think.
And it's a very important point, I think, to make, that the left likes to portray the Bundy family as millionaire ranchers, because they said, well, look, they didn't pay the user fees because they were protesting it. And then if we take these user fees over a couple of decades and we add penalties and compound interest and so forth, millions of dollars. So these guys are millionaires. And they're also a bunch of white guys. And so because of white privilege and because we've imagined them to be millionaires, but I've been to the ranch. I was there reporting. They are not wealthy by any means. They worked very hard. It was a hard scrabble life to try to get something out, to raise cattle in the desert, which is what they were doing. And he was the last guy there. There had been 50-plus ranchers in that area that had run everybody else out of business, and they stayed there out of tenacity. But it's a very difficult, hard life. They didn't have a lot of money, and that's why this is happening to them. People should be aware of that. You mentioned that. The fact that if you don't have a lot of money for lawyers, and they don't have a lot of money for lawyers, if you don't have a lot of money for big, fancy lawyers, then the system is really going to come after you, especially if you have brought up an issue of freedom that they want to tamp down. And that's the political aspect of this. That's why they have come after these guys so hard. They want to make an example of them, just as they have Ross Ulbricht and other people. They want to make an example of them so that nobody else tries to get their freedom or their rights out of this government.
I think that's true, David. You know, another important point I want to bring to your attention, this is involving the Nevada field office of the FBI, which is very likely some of the same individuals that are currently investigating the October 1st shooting. So,
yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
And when we look at that, let's talk about, when we come back, let's talk about Dan Love. This is a guy who was at the center of this. He was a special agent in charge of Utah and Nevada. And we have got this, I mean, there's some systemic problems in the Bureau of Land Management. As the Utah paper had pointed out, it wasn't but just a couple of decades ago that BLM agents had nothing but a pistol as a sidearm, and they didn't even have that before then. Now it has turned into this big paramilitary organization, and you've got these guys like Dan Love who have been given these dictatorial powers. Even a fellow special agent in charge who operated over Arizona looked at this and said, I can't believe what this guy is doing. He said, this is so over the top. It is so confrontational. I can't believe that this is happening. And he said that to a Utah newspaper. Now, he's been removed, but they're trying to purge all information about this guy who really made this confrontation happen. He's the one who pushed it, and he's been removed from his position there. But now they're going to cover up the fact that he was ever involved. His name is not going to be allowed to be mentioned. Is that right, Jason?
You know, it sounds like you've got more information on that particular guy than I do, David, but it doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, you know, you see these things happening all over the place. I think you might know that I've also done a lot of reporting on the Imran Awan case, and it's just amazing to me what these lawyers will do when they go into court and how they try to misrepresent things. That's why I think
Hang on, Jason. We got to take a quick break. We're going to come right back. We're talking to Jason Goodman. You can find him on Twitter, CS The Truth, and you can find him on YouTube. Jason Goodman is his channel. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Jason Goodman. You can find him on YouTube, Jason Goodman, also on Twitter at CS The Truth. That stands for Crowdsource The Truth. And I think, Jason, as we're looking at this, we're talking a little bit about Dan Love. This is a guy who has been relieved from his position now because of what had been found out about Burning Man. It made a little bit of a scandal, the fact that he was shaking down people for special perks. They wanted ice cream and these elaborate air conditioning facilities at Burning Man. Then we found out that he was pilfering artifacts. Then he was telling agents to destroy information and so forth. He's now been removed. He was the guy, however, who was totally in charge and directing all of this with this army of agents that they had out there. And it was that confrontational style that we saw not only in the attacks against Dave Bundy, the attacks against Clive and Bundy's sister attacking this middle-aged woman from behind and throwing her to the ground. She's a cancer survivor. That was the kind of thing that people were looking at. It's one of the reasons why we went out to cover it. We were concerned that this was going to turn into another Waco situation where the government was out of control, got vindictive, and started getting violent with people. They had already gotten violent somewhat. And when we look at the fact that there were FBI snipers, and that has now come out, the surveillance cameras and everything, that is all starting to come out. But now he is not going to be allowed to be named in this hearing. What do you think this is going at this point? I mean, they do say that there is some camera footage. What is happening with the trial right at this moment?
Well, just to touch on Dan Love for a moment, David, I think you've been a little bit generous in your description of him. I was unaware that he had been relieved of his position. That just happened on September 15th of 2017. Mm-hmm. I checked the Las Vegas Review Journal just during the break there. So, I mean, this is a guy who is not just confrontational. This is a guy who's willing to basically steal evidence in the form of minerals, which The possible existence of rare minerals on the Bundy land, the land that's in dispute there, is one of the major factors in this case. There was a whole a whole issue with Harry Reid and his son trying to arrange a deal with a Chinese interest to use the land for a solar farm. There's been speculation that there may well be uranium on this land, so it starts to raise questions about, you know, all the situation that's going on with Uranium One, and just really makes you ask, why is the government being so aggressive and so oppressive in their handling of this particular family? I mean, you know, we've got in Dan Love a guy who's willing to abuse his position of power, as you said, with regard to the Burning Man concert to get tickets to the show. And, you know, I don't know that this is a guy that we want enforcing our laws and making sure that our constitutional rights are being protected while they do that.
Well, it just goes to show how, you know, the old axiom that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. You give somebody these kind of dictatorial powers and they turn into little Caesars like this, and it corrupts them as well. They figure they can get away with anything. And when you're talking about the minerals that are there, we understand how this feeds into not only Agenda 21, but just regular old crony capitalism. You look at what happened in Arizona, where John McCain was there, and they took the Tonto National Forest, which had historical, had a religious significance to the Apache Indians. It had recreational aspects to it, as well as some people who were using the area for surface grazing rights and things like that. They grab all of that so they can then turn it over to a foreign corporation that will create a massive strip mining crater to get the copper. And that's exactly why they are pushing all of the farmers out of everywhere. That's why they're doing that in Nevada. We know what the game is. It's not only uranium, but there's a lot of different resources there that they can exploit. They want to make sure that they own it. So then these guys, these senators like Harry Reid, like John McCain, they can dole these things out to people. And it's not their stuff, but it is essentially like the Uranium One stuff with Hillary Clinton. We see these guys, they get control of it. They make the decisions. And they can release these resources to other corporations, and that's the corruption at that level. But then you put these types of people like Dan Love in charge of it, and it gets very corrupt. But it goes back to they're trying to paint the Bundys as being aggressive, and the people that were there to protect them to make sure that it didn't turn into a Waco. They're trying to paint them as being aggressive when the aggression is on the other side. That's why they wanted to cover up the footage. That's why they wanted to pretend that there weren't any snipers there.
I agree with you, David. And, you know, the thing that I experienced personally, and this doesn't have anything to do with the Bundys, but when Laura Loomer and I were at the Las Vegas Police Department for a press conference related to the Las Vegas shooting, they wouldn't allow us in. And now, admittedly, I did arrive a few minutes late. But the way the police treated me, there was an officer there who had a gun visibly strapped to his belt. We were inside the police station. There were two officers standing by his side, and I was holding a cell phone. And the officer who was speaking to me said, "Oh, you know, sir, you're intimidating me." And I mean, I was like, that's ridiculous. I have a cell phone. You have three guns. How am I intimidating you? And I began to think that it's possible that the officer is using language like this so he can create, you know, it's almost like he's writing his police report right there in front of me.
That's right.
You could say,
that's
Mr.
right.
Goodman intimidated me, so then I punched him in the face and handcuffed him and dragged him into jail.
Well, I experienced that when I was there covering the Bundys. It took that long drive from the Bundy Ranch all the way down to Las Vegas, which is a couple-hour drive. Went down there to talk to the information officer for the sheriff's department. Mm-hmm. And waited there, tried to go through all the usual channels and be respectful of them. And he comes out and he goes, well, let's go over here and talk. And basically bum rushes me outside the door.
Wow.
So it's like, okay, I get it. I understand what this is. It's total bullshit, you know, well, let's just leave it at that. But the bottom line is that that's the way these guys operate. Look, they're thugs. It's Las Vegas. I mean, this is like a mafia town. It was, and it still is, a mafia town. And the police that are there operate it as a mafia town. And so you're not going to, and that county basically has almost the entire population of Nevada in that one Clark County that goes all the way up the side of the state there, because most of it is owned by the government. And that's the way they want all of it to be owned by the government.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't mean to disparage law enforcement officers, but it's obviously a dangerous job, and we need to rely on people who are being very brave to put their lives at risk. I mean, I certainly don't walk around with a gun, and I'm not risking my life every day. But at the same time, it's a very fine line that these law enforcement professionals need to walk, because, you know, we don't want to be living in you know, the former Soviet Union or Nazi Germany or, you know, communist China or some.
Everybody believes are the CIA or the NSA now. Nobody will talk to you. Nobody will give you the time of day. And when the government becomes at every level, and that means whether you're talking to the guy at the sheriff's department all the way up, at every level, the government believes that you don't have any right to know anything about what your government is doing. That is an attitude that treats us all as slaves. And those people there, those police officers there, are going to be living as slaves. And the day is coming very soon where they're going to be replaced by robots. And they're going to experience the same type of arrogance if they don't stand for the rule of law. That's the real fact about this. It's not going to be very long before you're going to have a few people that are going to have so much power that they can leverage because of technology that these guys are going to be swept into the dustbin with the rest of us.
You know, David, it may sound fantastic to some people or like something out of science fiction, but, you know, some of the other reporting I've been doing has focused on artificial intelligence. And according to some of the biggest experts in that field, this AI singularity where the robotic mind becomes, you know, self-aware or autonomous has already occurred. So, you know, Saudi Arabia made an artificial intelligence robot a citizen of its country just a few weeks ago. So what you're describing is not so far-fetched. And again, if the people who are in charge of these things think it's okay to do things like, you know, under the Patriot Act, we've got the JTTF, the Joint Terrorism Task Force, where federal agencies like the FBI and the Bureau of Land Management can co-opt local police resources and essentially turn them into federal police. And people might think this is okay because they're trying to protect us from terrorism. However, the whole purpose of having a federal government and state governments and local law enforcement and the FBI all as separate entities, it all goes along with the whole checks and balances. I mean, we don't want one central autonomous power that can just decide they want you in jail and then leave you there until all your teeth fall out and you die.
That's right. And if you understand what is happening, the fusion centers that are happening at the local level are highly and tightly integrated with law enforcement at every level, to the highest level. What they're trying to do is create a centralization control grid of everything. And it should really concern us when that control grid extends to law enforcement. So the fusion centers are part of that. But geospatial intelligence has been the center of the intelligence community, the fastest growing part of this. The fact that they want to monitor all of your activity, they call it activity-based intelligence. They want to do human domain analytics where they follow you, they map you. That's what Twitter is doing. That's what these other organizations are doing when they look outside of Twitter. That is all mapping into this grid. And it is a confluence of corporations as well as the government that are cooperating on this. They're creating a unified Big Brother system, a panopticon, and that's what's really troubling about this. Even the military is going to law enforcement to try to do this activity-based intelligence because law enforcement is so far ahead of the military. Well, thank you for joining us. Jason Goodman, again, you can find him on YouTube at Jason Goodman. You can also find him on Twitter at CS The Truth. That stands for Crowdsource The Truth. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for the work you do, Jason.
Thank you, David. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Stay with us.
Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're going to be joined in the next hour by Doug Casey of Casey Research, Crisis Investing. And we're going to talk to him about an essay that he did about whether or not we will be able to stop a race war that will break the U.S. apart. I think that's the design by George Soros and others. But before we do, we were just talking to Jason Goodman, and he touched on the idea of the AI intelligence and the artificial intelligence, the threat that it presents to us, but also the idea of killer robots, autonomous killing machines, or even if they're not completely autonomous, the fact that they could be directed and the kinds of weapons that are being created. You have to understand that when we talk about weapons of mass destruction, people typically talk about NBC, nuclear, biological, and chemical. We now have another class of weapons to add to this, and that's these killer robots, these killing machines, swarming drones, assassination drones, as you saw illustrated in the film. We played a little bit of that last week. And it was part of a drone video to try to explain to political leaders why they need to be concerned about this. And the part that we had played for you, he holds a handheld drone in his hand, and it goes up, and it's kind of dancing around. And he says, yeah, it's randomly moving around so that it can't be taken out by a sniper. But it has facial recognition, and it's been pre-programmed with one individual's face, and it has a shaped charge in it. And so he releases it, and it goes out, and it finds a dummy head, and it explodes that shaped charge, which would basically kill a person with that. Now, I want to play the next part of that video, because what he does is he first illustrates the weapon. And understand, this weapon is something that, we don't know if it exists or not, but it doesn't require any technology that does not already readily exist. So it's not much of a stretch to say that that currently exists. But he wants to show them what the true implications of this are. I want to play that next part of the video where you see mass assassinations on the floor of the U.S. Senate. Here's that video.
The nation is still recovering from yesterday's incident, which officials are describing as some kind of automated attack, which killed 11 U.S. senators at the Capitol building.
They flew in from everywhere, but attacked just one side of the aisle. It was chaos. People were screaming.
You can see high windows, very small, precisely punctured to gain entry to the building.
What did you do for the victim?
I just did what I could for him. Things weren't even interested in me. They're just buzzing.
Government sources admit the intelligence community has no idea who perpetrated the attack, nor whether it was a state, group, or even a single individual.
So if we can't defend ourselves, then we strike back.
We are investing very heavily in classified defense projects.
We make it our deterrent like our nuclear deterrent. We stockpile in the millions, the billions.
At key facilities. The White House, the New York Stock Exchange, Wall Street.
Okay, so what they did there was they laid out, first they showed the weapon in that little video, and it's a very, very chilling video. You have to understand what is the capability of this, where this is eventually heading. You can create a drone that is able to assassinate someone, and as they illustrate in their video, these drones operate in a swarm. They're communicating with each other. That already happens. That technology exists. How is it going to be used? How is it going to be controlled? Will it turn into an arms race where we say, well, they have this capability. We need to take it to the next level. That's the thing that should concern everybody. But it should concern the people who have the power right now to stop it. It should concern them the most. And I think that's the brilliance of that demonstration video to show all those short news clips to say, hey, how would this play out? You could have somebody, a rogue group, could go down and pick a hit list of 11 senators on the floor. They show these robots being released out of the back of an SUV. They go up to a wall. They hit that wall. The shaped charge robots sacrificially use themselves to do a hole in the wall. Then the rest of the assassination robots go in and take out particularly picked politicians. They need to get control of this. This is something that is very concerning. This is technology that is out of control. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Segment, we're going to be talking to Doug Casey, Casey Research, Crisis Investing, and we're going to talk to him about an article that he wrote saying why race will break the U.S. apart. He believes that it will. And I think it's kind of interesting. We had booked this interview last week, but I think it's kind of interesting that today we saw Charles Manson die, the man who tried to start a race war. He wasn't very sophisticated, though. Not like George Soros, not like Antifa, not like Black Lives Matter. Now, that is weaponized to start a race war. Very sophisticated compared to his desires, but a lot in common with Charles Manson. It is an insane idea, born out of evil and hatred, but they have a very sophisticated plan to make that happen. We were just talking about killer robots, and we don't have time to run it, but there is that clip. If you haven't seen it, Boston Dynamics, these are the people who were making robots, and they have robots that walk and four legs and so forth, robots that can walk and run on two legs. And now they've got a robot that's doing backflips on two legs like a human. There's a little bit of spots of the, yeah, you can see him jumping from one block to the other and doing it very capably. It's amazing to see this balance, and it is very frightening. If you think the day is very far away where we're not going to have the human population oppressed and suppressed by robots like this, doing military functions, doing police functions, you're not paying attention. You should be very concerned about this, because we don't have politicians who care enough or have the vision to see where this is leading. That's the really disturbing thing. They don't support our individual rights. And they're looking at this just like the engineers who design it and think that it's not going to affect them. It is going to affect them. And if we don't start establishing individual liberty, human dignity above all else, then we're going to wind up slaves in a very high-tech, very oppressive society. And when you look at that robot, and when you look at the film that we just played, again, that assassination drone from last week, and we played the second part of that video, where they try to explain to politicians how this is going to look, you have to understand where this is headed. And I don't know really at this point what we do, because we've got a lot of leaders who basically are just playing sexual harassment games. Here's Hillary Clinton praising Al Franken for admitting to sexual assault, and says that he's better than Moore and Trump. And this is what we're preoccupied. I mean, we got the world about to burn down, being taken over by these incredibly agile, sophisticated killing machines. And again, they don't have to be self-aware. They can be directed by people like, oh, Hillary Clinton, for example. Or if you're on the other side and you're afraid of Donald Trump, think about Donald Trump controlling these autonomous killing machines. Does that bother you? I mean, we ought to come together regardless of our political differences and stop this insanity. But that's where we're going to head. And meanwhile, we're just playing these little games back and forth with Al Franken, Moore, and Trump. And Hillary comes out. She says, look at the contrast between Al Franken, who accepted responsibility, he apologized, and then on the other hand, you got Roy Moore and Donald Trump who've done neither. Okay, well, what if they're innocent? Should they accept responsibility if they're innocent? We saw the photographic evidence of Al Franken, and as a matter of fact, it's not just that one picture where there's a question whether or not he's touching, but you know, there's other issues where he's done this over and over again. He did it to Joy Behar at an awards ceremony. So you can look at Bill Clinton. All the times that he was accused of violent, violent sexual assault and rape, Hillary Clinton covering for him and then attacking the women, calling them bimbos and doing everything she could to destroy their character. Even laughing about getting a child rapist off. That's the Hillary Clinton. So maybe, you know, I think Al Franken probably is better than Bill and Hillary Clinton, but that's putting the bar pretty low. Meanwhile, you've got a Franken spokesman saying that Al Franken will not resign. He's going to take the Thanksgiving holiday, and he's going to do a lot of reflecting. It's kind of like when you see Harvey Weinstein take a vacation at a sex rehabilitation clinic. Now Al Franken is going to do, I guess, sex rehab and reflect over the Thanksgiving holiday. I mean, is he going to be looking at himself in a mirror? Is he going to be taking some more selfies like that one that he did with Leanne Tweeden? I mean, what does that mean to say that he's going to reflect? Okay, no, he's going to deflect is what he's going to do. He's going to deflect any criticism away from himself. And I find it very interesting that all these people like Mitch McConnell and Mitt Romney, you know, Mitt Romney, remember about Judge Roy Moore? Well, you know, you just don't get innocent until proven guilty in politics. No, no, no. You should step down and resign. Same thing with Mitch McConnell. Even Chuck Todd said, this looks orchestrated. Have they said anything about Al Franken? Nah, no, nothing at all from Mitt Romney. Nothing from the GOP establishment. We had a clip. Let's get video clip number two. Had a clip from Senator Flake. Whether or not this was designed to be an open mic, whether or not this was a mistake from him, or whether or not this was an intentional thing, because Donald Trump called it into question. He says, oh, you got Senator Jeff Flake, and he puts in parentheses Y, as in flaky, who is unelectable in the great state of Arizona. He quit the race. He's got anemic polls. was caught, and they put some parentheses, purposely, on mic saying bad things about your favorite president. He'll be a no on tax cuts because his political career, anyway, is toast. And here's what President Trump was reacting to.
Forms to brass tacks on the future of the Republican Party just seconds after Senator Jeff Flake had finished a town hall on tax reform. He's still on an open mic chatting it up with Republican ally Mesa Mayor John Giles.
Come the party of Roy Moore and Donald Trump. We are the toast.
And I'm not throwing smoke at you, but you're the guy that could, just for fun, think how much fun it would be just to be the foil, you know, and to point out what an idiot this guy is.
Okay,
you know, anyway.
Just then, another man points to the senator's lapel mic. The realization washes over Jeff Flake's face. Back to the conversation, though. The mayor prodding the senator here to run for president, apparently referring to Donald Trump as an idiot. Giles had just minutes earlier asked Flake about the possibilities for 2020. You can see the mayor highlighted here at the front of the audience.
And Senator Flake, I think, can we start the presidential campaign today? If there's any way we can...
Okay. So they don't think just that Donald Trump is an idiot. They think you're idiots. They think that they can keep running for election, that Jeff Flake can run for president, and they can keep lying to us about the borders. They can keep lying to us about Obamacare. They can keep lying to us about cutting taxes. And these globalist establishment rhinos think they can just keep getting elected. No, you can't. That's why it is so important when we look at what they're doing, and they lump more together with Trump. Why? Because they use the same tactics. Look at what Gloria Allred did. I talked about how this, not only is it exactly the same MO, but it comes out at exactly the same time, about a month before the election, coming out with these accusations, the same as they did with President Trump. These people are very incredibly, incredibly corrupt, unbelievably corrupt. And it's not just Jeff Flake. It's also Susan Collins, who is now saying she's not going to support tax reform and so forth, and calling out President Trump, still complaining about the sexual harassment charges that were disproven. Remember Gloria Allred, what she tried to do to President Trump? And then they exposed, because they had an email, they exposed the real motivations of Summer Zervos, but that didn't stop it. They're still coming after President Trump, trying to sue him, and that, of course, has been put off as long as he's present. But she's coming out and saying, hey, we still got these sexual harassment allegations against Trump, and they remain very disturbing. She says voters in Alabama have to choose not to elect Roy Moore. You know what Susan Collins did when Bill Clinton was up for impeachment, both for obstruction of justice and for perjury and other charges? She refused to vote to impeach him. She didn't have a problem with what Bill Clinton was doing. She has a problem with tax cuts. She has a problem with these other issues. That's why she manufactures these charges against Trump, against Moore. That's why she's lumping and Jeff Flake are lumping them all together. No, it will be over for them, and it should be over for them, and you should understand where these people are coming from. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're going to talk to Doug Casey. David Knight, and we're going to be talking to Doug Casey of CaseyResearch.com. You can also find him on Twitter at CaseyResearch. Before we do, real quickly, I want to let you know about the products that we have on sale at InfoWarsStore.com. That's what funds this operation. It's what funds everything that we do here. It's what keeps us free and independent. And at no time has this ever been more important than when we look at the massive censorship that is being enacted everywhere. The cooperation, if you want to. I call it crony censorship, the crony censorship that is going on in the public-private partnership to shut down free speech and competition and information. That is going on right now with political circles. It's also going on with Twitter and Google. We've talked about that earlier in the program. If you want to keep independent journalism alive, one way to do it is to support us and to support your health and the health of your family with the products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com. And we've taken some of our most popular products and put them on a 50% discount along with free shipping. Here are some of those products. Z-Shield, to help you fight toxic metal and chemical pollution. It's a defense support system that is now 50% off plus free shipping. Caveman's True Paleo Formula. Again, that's 50% off with free shipping. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, a great way to get your vitamins and minerals without taking a lot of pills. That's 50% off with free shipping. Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formula that you can take orally instead of getting a B12 injection. You can get the same result just putting this under your tongue, leaving it for about 15 seconds. Tastes great. Very easy to take. Secret 12, our vitamin B12, 50% off with free shipping. And we also have Brain Force Plus. Now back in stock, 50% off plus free shipping. A great way to increase your concentration and to increase your alertness without taking a lot of caffeine or other things like that. Brain Force Plus, a great nootropic. Again, 50% off with free shipping. Take a look at all the different products that we have on sale at InfoWarsStore.com. All right, let's go to Doug Casey. And, of course, he's CaseyResearch.com, Twitter, at Casey Research. Doug is a best-selling author, a world-renowned speculator, libertarian philosopher. He has a newsletter, at least you did have Crisis Investing. I remember I used to get that newsletter a while back. Do you still have that, Doug, Crisis Investing?
Well, we have a bunch more newsletters. I sold most of Casey Research to Stansberry Publishing.
And okay.
Half a dozen newsletters now.
Well, I remember when you had Crisis Investing, you would show the Chinese character for Crisis. And it was a combination of danger and opportunity. I wanted to get you on because I saw this article that you had up on Zero Hedge on why race will break the U.S. apart. And that brings up a couple of different issues. I mean, in it, you're pointing out that really the United States has gotten too large to govern from one central place. And a big part of that is the cultural divide. I'll let you break this down a little bit. I mean, is it a good or a bad thing for the U.S. to have to break apart? What do you think about that?
Well, those are several questions, David. They're all good ones. It started out that the United States was a single cultural entity. There were differences, of course, between the people in Massachusetts and those in Virginia, let's say. But it was the same general culture. Today, it's become overtly multicultural, and you can't have a country with many different cultures. At that point, it becomes an empire. And I'm afraid that the U.S. has actually become an empire in many ways. I'm not just talking about the ridiculous overseas adventures that we're engaging in, where we have combat troops in over 100 countries around the world. It's a culture is something where people share the same values, perhaps share the same religion. They read the same books. They have the same habits. And this is no longer true in the United States. Multiculturalism, we have people from Somalia, totally alien place. They're bringing in people from Pakistan and so forth. Now, people hear me say this and they say, well, are you a racist? And of course, this brings up another question, which is a real hot button in today's world.
Well, you know, when we look at this and we look at this multiculturalism, we understand that this is something that's being done deliberately, obviously. I mean, do these people who are opening up the borders and giving us multiculturalism, first they started it preaching it as a virtue rather than something that maybe was going to tear the United States apart. They preached it as a virtue, and now they're implementing it very hard. Do you think that they just don't get it, or is this a deliberate effort to take down the United States?
Well, the problem is that there are a lot of people out there that actually hate Western civilization and its values. And I find that very disturbing, because of all the civilizations and cultures that have existed in world history, as far as I'm concerned, Western civilization, which started in Greece in the 6th century BC, is the only one that's worth more than the powder it takes to blow it to hell. What is Western civilization and what are its values? Incidentally, it's not taught in colleges and universities anymore.
That's right. Every civilization except the one that we have is taught and held up as virtuous. If they even mention Western civilization, it's only to mention its faults. And, of course, you can find fault with any civilization. But they only teach the faults of Western civilization, the faults of American cultural foundations and legal and religious foundations, while offering everything else as an alternative and presenting it as nothing but virtuous, right?
Well, you're quite correct. And let me actually go further. I've lived in 10 countries around the world on all the continents. I've traveled to 155 countries, most of them many times. In fact, I'm in San Francisco right now, but I flew up here from Argentina. So I'm fairly familiar with most of the world's cultures. And my hobby is actually, one of my hobbies is actually ancient history. Doesn't sound very relevant to today's world, I know. But
we're going to relive it if we don't understand it, right?
Yes, but I'll tell you why I think that Western civilization is the only civilization that actually has real value in today's world. Why do I say that? It's the only civilization that actually values individualism. I do. So that's important. If you like individualism, you have to like Western civilization. It's the only civilization that is founded on reason, thinking things out in a scientific manner, as opposed to superstition, basically, which all the others are. It's the only civilization that really values nonviolence as a value. It's the only civilization which has brought us the world's literature, great literature, art, music. These are all products of Western civilization. All the things around us that we have, the buildings, the technology, the science, these things all rose out of Western civilization.
We gotta take a break, Doug, and we're talking to Doug Casey. And I would add that Western civilization is the only one that stopped slavery. All the rest of them have all had it. And in many cases, it is still going on everywhere else. But it was Western civilization that stopped slavery. But that is what they want to focus on to take down Western civilization, along with other things. So we're going to be right back. We're going to talk to Doug Casey. Does it have to be violent if the U.S. breaks apart? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Waging war on corruption. It's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Doug Casey. And again, you can find him at caseyresearch.com, also Twitter at caseyresearch. And I do want to talk to Doug about a couple of books that he has that I think look very interesting. One is called Speculator. The other one is called Drug Lord. And I want to get into these two because it looks like it hits on all the hot button issues of our time. But before we do, I wanted to finish up with this editorial that Doug had written. It was on Zero Hedge on why race will break the U.S. apart. Doug, you know, when I'm looking at this, I can clearly see that the U.S. is coming apart at the seams. And it's not just the multiculturalism, but people are going in different directions politically. And we have, you know, if it's not Islam that's going to come in and break us apart, because, you know, Islam is both a religion and it's also a political, legal, cultural system, so that could break us apart. But we have a lot of political differences right now. You can see this with all the not my president and people pushing for revolution. And when you look at the size of the United States, I just think that it's become ungovernable. Certainly, it was never designed to be governed from one point at the center. But you look at the population of just Texas alone is about 10 times what it was for all 13 colonies originally. So I can very clearly see this happening. There's movements in Texas. There's movements in California to do a Cal exit or a Tex exit. So I could see that happening. Why did you focus, though, on race?
Well, look, genetically speaking, going back to the beginning of Homo sapiens, it's pretty obvious that you, in your clan, you were with people like yourself. If you were out hunting a deer and you encountered somebody that was different from you outside of your clan, you're both fighting for the means of survival, an identifier that this person wasn't part of your clan or part of your tribe, perhaps, was that he was a different race. so that it's an identifier. Look, we have to discriminate between all kinds of things, good and bad, fast and slow, stupid, intelligent. And race is unimportant when you're talking to an individual. And I think that you should view people strictly as individuals. But you try to gain all the information that you can about an individual when you meet him. Is he male or is she female? Okay, that gives you data about it. Is he or she of a certain religious background or a different one? Gives you more information. And race is one of these things that may tell you something about them until you get to know them as an individual. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I see things. Because as a person who believes in free speech and free thought, I want people to do and say whatever they can that tells me more about them. And race is just one of those identifiers until you get to know them as an individual. I want to emphasize that again.
Sure, I understand. Yeah, you know, when we look at it and we look at the history of secession, and in this country we think about it and we associate it with a violent civil war. But it hasn't always been that way. It doesn't necessarily be that way. And even when you look at Scandinavian countries, they have all been together in one, or at times they've broken up into two or three or four like they are now. I'm talking about Norway, Sweden, Denmark, so forth. They can break up, or you can have something like the Czech Republic and Slovakia. It used to be Czechoslovakia. They broke up without having a war. But I think if the U.S. breaks up, whether it's along fault lines of race, which is what George Soros and others seem to be pushing here, whether it's along those lines or whether it's along political lines, I would expect, would you, that it's going to be violent if that happens in the United States?
Well, it certainly seems to be heading in that direction, because if you can't sort things out via talking with each other, and these days, it seems like the people from the blue counties and the people from the red counties have a visceral hatred for each other and what ideas they may have. It's much worse than it was in the late 60s and the early 70s when there were hundreds of bombs that went off around the U.S. And so forth. It's much more serious than it was back then. So if you can't talk these things out in a rational environment, can't have speakers and auditoriums, it gets ramped up. I think that in the years to come, when you turn on the mass media, you might as well just turn off the audio and turn on the Rolling Stones Street Fighting Man and play it on a continuous loop as you're watching the video. I think it can get quite ugly. It's a pity, but that's just the way the cookie's going to crumble. Incidentally, the southern states, the actual impetus for the so-called civil war. It wasn't a civil war. A civil war is technically one where two parties are trying to take over control of the same government. It was a war of secession.
Exactly. Very different. Exactly.
But the actual impetus for it was economic. Slavery was just a subtext. It was because the southern states were being taxed very heavily for imports of goods from Britain, industrial goods that the North wanted to sell to them. That's what really set the thing off. But they had a perfect legal right to secede in the same way that the original colonies had a right to secede from Britain. And this is happening all over the world, incidentally.
And they talked about it in those terms. The people in the South talked about it as a second war of independence, a war of secession. And as you're pointing out, the slavery component of it, you always look and follow the money. The slavery component was one part of it, but as you point out, it was trade. It was whether or not they were going to have what they called at the time internal improvements, which is what we have in terms of our government investing in infrastructure in other parts of the country, all those different things. But, you know, it's also, I've mentioned this several times, Doug, it's like at the same time, we saw a war that was happening in Italy, which really was a civil war. They were fighting for control of the whole thing there. But it was... there were forces that were moving to consolidate regional governments that were under kind of an agrarian orientation, to consolidate them into nation states that were really based around the Industrial Revolution. And we saw that happening throughout Europe at the very same time that it was happening here. So there were forces that were happening at that time. And now I see these forces that are going in the other direction, like we see Catalonia or Brexit or whatever. A lot of these nation states are wanting to get out of the consolidation into a European Union. And a lot of areas within those nation states want to declare their independence, as we see in northern Italy or in Catalonia or elsewhere.
Well, you're absolutely right. And it's going to happen not just in Europe, but all over the world, particularly in Africa and the Middle East and Central Asia. None of those so-called countries there are real entities. They're all put together arbitrarily with in the boardrooms of Europe, drawing lines. So Africa in particular is going to be full of wars of secession and civil wars in the years to come, which is especially interesting because by the year 2100, 45% of all the people on this planet will be from Africa. Demographics is a trend that can't be turned around easily, and people aren't paying attention to this.
You know, when we look at possible powder kegs, about a week ago, I was talking to Matt Bracken, and he thought that what's happening right now in the Middle East, especially with Saudi Arabia, looks a bit like Europe just before World War One, and the fact that we have these coups going on in Saudi Arabia that they want to move against Iran and Lebanon. Do you see that as a potential massive powder keg that's going to cause incredible economic disruption as the price of oil would spike if they have a war against all the major producers of oil?
I don't see why Saudi Arabia didn't blow up decades ago, quite frankly.
Yeah.
It's a
house of cards.
It's a primitive medieval community with the Shiites in the north east that have all the oil on their ground, and the this particularly virulent type of Islam that controls the country. This is an accident waiting to happen. I don't really care about that because the U.S. itself imports very little oil from Saudi Arabia these days. It's mainly the Japanese, the Chinese that get most of Saudi Arabia's oil. But you can be sure.
Okay, hang on, Doug. We got to take a break, and we're going to come right back. We're going to talk to Doug about his books, Speculator and Drug Lord, because that takes place, a fictional account. But it gives you an idea of where we might be headed. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're talking to Doug Casey, CaseyResearch.com. We're going to tell you about his books and where you can get his books as well. But as we were going to break, I had asked Doug about what is going on in the Middle East. And, of course, he's absolutely right that the House of Saud is a house of cards. It's a medieval structure. It should have broken apart a long time ago. It may be breaking apart now, or there may be a war that involves most of the oil-producing countries of the Middle East. As we were going to break, Doug, you said you thought it wouldn't be an issue here because we're self-sufficient here, but wouldn't it affect the price of oil because it'd be more demand worldwide when other people who are dependent on the Middle East would lose their source?
Oh, absolutely. It could take the price of oil to a couple hundred dollars a barrel, and you'll recall that back in 2011, oil got up to 130 roughly a barrel. So a couple hundred a barrel if Saudi Arabia was cut off. And of course, if that happened, the Iranians and the Iraqis wouldn't be in a position to export oil through the Gulf either. So sure, that's correct. In the long run, however, I have tremendous faith in scientists and engineers. There are more scientists and engineers alive today than have lived in all the world's history put together. And they're in process of developing new ways to retrieve the hydrocarbons that are under the ground and to fabricate hydrocarbons from, it's very simple. It's only hydrogen and oxygen and carbon.
Yes.
Simple elements.
A synthetic fuel, yeah.
So this stuff shouldn't be blown out of proportion.
Sure. Okay. Well, that's good. Let's talk a little bit about your books here. You've got a couple of them. They look very interesting because they look like they're fiction books. But they're pieced together from your experiences, from your interest. One of them is a speculator. And in the synopsis you've got here is very interesting. It said, the greatest gold discovery in history draws a young Charles Knight, no relation to me, to West Africa. And he gets caught up in a world of speculation and African politics. And then another one, Drug Lord, that navigates the war on drugs and crony pharmaceutical industry. I've known you for a long time. I know the war on drugs is something that is preoccupies you a great deal, as it does me. I'm very concerned about the negative effects of the war on drugs. Tell us a little bit about those two books there, Doug.
Well, Speculator, first of all, let me say one thing about novels is that you can say a lot of things in the form of fiction that you had best not say, perhaps, or nonfiction.
Yeah.
So that's one reason I did that. Also, there's a different group of people that tend to read fiction and read nonfiction. But these books are full of data and information. The first book, Speculator, our hero, who's 23, gets involved in a gold mining stock, decides to check it out, and goes to the mythical country of Gondwana, where he gets involved in an African bush war with boy soldiers and all this type of thing, and makes a lot of friends in Africa. I spent a lot of time in Africa. I spent a lot of time all over the world, quite frankly, less and less in the U.S. So he makes a couple $100 million. The government steals it from him. He salvages some of it. And then he goes on to the second book. There's seven books in this series where he comes back and decides to become a drug lord, both in the legal, which is, say, the FDA area, and the illegal, the DEA area, doing drugs. So we pretty much explain the way the drug business works. And it takes him back to Africa and gets involved with got a bunch of guys that are in a black drug gang in Washington, D.C. that become his friends. So these things, they're both actually excellent reads, excellent novels, if you read the recommendations by various people.
But it sounds like it's kind of culled together from your experience, some your philosophy as well, and in contemporary 21st century America. It sounds like a real adventure book.
Well, that's quite correct. It's set in current day.
And yeah, worldwide, of course, yeah.
Say that everybody's first novel is at least semi-autobiographical, and there is some truth to that in books. But they're going to get more wild and woolly as time goes on, because in next year's book, Charles becomes an assassin, where we explore the history and the techniques and, most importantly, the morality of political assassination. And then after that, he's accused of becoming a terrorist, which is a real hot potato in today's world. And the year after that, he becomes a warlord, where he goes back to Africa. And everybody's supposed to hate warlords, but I'll show you where how a warlord can be a very good guy, because Charles is a very good guy, highly moral. So this is a great
story. Kind of reminds me of Ayn Rand, except probably you don't have the long monologues that she would have that would go on forever and ever. But it's fixed in the contemporary milieu, the types of things that we're confronted with all the time. As you pointed out, the two different aspects of drug lords, the pharmaceutical companies that operate in Washington with their permission and assistance, and the ones who operate outside the legal drug monopoly as well.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in the investment business all of my life, basically. And at this point, I'd rather become well-known as a novelist. But, David, you and I dislike the same people, and that's pretty evident in these novels. Mm-hmm. There aren't many out there like it these days. It's like the Jack Reacher books, but with sound philosophical input.
That's right. And with politics and resources at the center of it, because all of your research has really been going out and identifying natural resources. Pretty much you focus a great deal on that. That's, I'm sure, why you went to Africa, because we've seen with the Bilderberg Group that their focus, as you point out, it's not just that it's a lot of people that are going to be there that are going to be driving events and politics, but the vast wealth that is there. And so that has now become a focus of the elites who meet at Bilderberg or at Davos. How can they get control of that? How can they exploit that? And, of course, the politics that we're seeing right now with Mugabe And the Marxism that is there, I'm sure that's a part of Speculator as well.
Well, I've actually spent a lot of time in Zimbabwe, of all places. When it was Rhodesia, during the war, my first book, The International Man, became the largest selling book in the history of Rhodesia. At that time, there were 250,000 Europeans in the country. There are probably not more than 3,000 or 4,000 left. Wow. So at that time, they all bought International Man to assist them in making the chicken run, as they called it.
But and now everybody's buying Bitcoin in Zimbabwe. Is double even the astronomical prices that we're seeing worldwide because they're trying to get whatever they've got left out of there. Whoever is left there is trying to get out.
Well, the name of that first novel is Speculator, and of course, that's what I've been my whole life. And I got involved in Bitcoin some time ago. I've got involved in stocks that are related to blockchain technology and Bitcoin as well. So I don't have to write these novels because I need the money. I'm writing them because I'm interested in it, and I think interested in the subjects, and I think people will be interested in reading the novels.
Well, I think they will be too. I think there's a lot to be learned, as you point out, in a fictional novel. You can get to the nitty gritty that you can't in a something that is not fictional. You can have the disclaimer there that any resemblance to people real or imagined is just coincidental, when in fact it may not be. That looks like an excellent series of books, and of course it draws on your vast experience as a speculator, as an investor, as somebody who looks at natural resources, and also at politics. I can remember years ago reading a book by Jim Rogers called what was it? I don't remember the title now, but he went around the world on a motorcycle making.
Jim's an old friend of mine. That was probably Investment Biker.
That's it. Investment Biker. He goes around. And I thought it was very interesting. And so I think in these books, people are going to see, of course, this was nonfiction, but in these fictional books, I think what they're going to have the advantage of in a full fictional story is your observations of what you've traveled around your entire life. It sounds like that's what that is.
Well, and I've got to say that in both of these two books, in a minor degree, they're platforms for talking about the problems between the races today. Because our hero, Charles Knight, most of his friends in both of these two books turn out to be black guys, both in Africa and in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. So people might find that of interest, because people say that just because I suspect we're going to have a lot more racial problems in this country, it doesn't mean that people of different races or religions or cultures can't get along in the same way they can. The problem is, of course, government trying
to
force.
That's always the problem. Government interfering in these individual relationships. Thank you so much for joining us, Doug. And again, you can find those books, Speculator and Drug Lord. You can find them on Amazon or at highgroundbooks.com. That's highgroundbooks.com. Thank you so much for joining us, Doug Casey. And that concludes our program today. I'm David Knight. Thank you for joining us.